Monster Movie Media presents. Greetings and welcome to episode 96 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. Coming up in this episode, we dissect and review one of the newest Disney films, Alice Through the Looking Glass. A few months ago, we analyzed the trailer. And a few of us have actually seen it enough to talk about it. So that's what we're going to do. Before we get into that, I want to ask you guys a question. And I want to know, what is it that you're doing while you listen to Creepy Kingdom? I'm very curious. Are you mowing the lawn? Riding the bus? What are you doing right now? You know? Tweet at me, at Creepy Kingdom. If you're in the Citizens of the Creepy Kingdom Facebook group, you can write it in there, send an email, whatever you want, but let me know, what are you guys doing while you're listening to the show? Also, in case you have not heard or need to be reminded, us here at Creepy Kingdom are producing a documentary about Haunted Mansion fans called Foolish Mortals, starting next week. If you're listening to this when this comes out, or maybe it's happening right now while you're listening to it, we're actually going to begin filming the documentary. If you are in the New York City or New Jersey area between July 2nd and July 6th, definitely get in touch with us, foolishmortalsdoc@gmail.com. You may have a chance to appear in the film. And in Seattle on July 10th, we're going to be in Seattle filming interviews for the documentary. So if you're in that area and we're close to that area, you know, send us an email, foolishmortalsdoc@gmail.com. We have a few more locations we're traveling to. We're just getting started on this. We're going to be filming this documentary over the next few months. So this is by no means going to be over in a flash. So we're going to announce some other dates and locations soon, but we're just taking things step by step as we are just kind of going along by the seat of our pants with this documentary, as we are paying for it with the funds that we're earning in our Etsy store. So we can't plan too far ahead right now, but if you'd like to support us, you just go to foolishmortalsdoc.com, click on store. That'll take you to the Etsy store. And there you can pre-order the film, get an exclusive Hatbox Ghost pin from Imagineer Terry Harden and a few other fun stuff. So if you want to support what we're doing, that's the best way to do it. So now, without any further ado, let's begin. Okie dokie, I'm here with the Countess of the Creepy Kingdom, Miss Cupcake Terror.
Hello, everyone. Hello, James. How are you?
I am excellent. I am drinking the blood of my enemies in this gauntlet.
Oh, wow. You are.
So we're going to do a little follow-up. A few months back, we did an episode kind of reviewing the trailer for Alice Through the Looking Glass. And surprisingly enough, we were able to talk a full hour just about a trailer.
Which is amazing.
How long can we talk about the full movie?
I could go on about this one. I'll try not to, but
because just thought we'd kind of follow up. What's funny is we like to review trailers on the show, and then usually ends up happening is it takes a long time for us on the show to have actually seen the movie, like all of us. But coincidentally, Cupcake and I did see this movie. It's about a month old at this point, so I think it's also enough time to put it out there and say it's gonna be full of spoilers. So I figured if you warning now. So if you still haven't seen it and you don't want to be spoiled, I don't really feel like this is the kind of movie that you talk about spoilers and it's going to ruin the movie. I don't know.
Yeah. I think this one is kind of, it's been a long time since I've read the actual book, so I don't know how much it actually holds true. I'm pretty sure a lot of it's just made up by Disney. I'm sure someone will get mad and nerd rage at me because I haven't read the books in a long time. The last time I read any of the Alice in Wonderland books, I was a teenager, like a preteen last time I think I read any of those. So
yeah, we're not going to worry about the source material too much here.
Thank goodness. Because I'm pretty sure I don't know. Okay, anyhow.
Yeah, that's not what's important.
Hold on. Screw you, Lewis Carroll.
Yeah, come on.
Who cares about you? No pun. Of Disney here.
All right, so we both saw it and we're going to talk about it, and then a little bit later we're going to share some thoughts of some of our listeners that are part of the Citizens of the Creepy Kingdom Facebook group on Facebook. That could be you if you joined the group, which I brought up recently. Statistically, I would say maybe 1/6 of our listeners are in this group.
What's up, listeners? Y'all need to get in the Facebook group.
That's all I'm saying. You know, like, that's the place to be if you want to chat with us and keep the conversation going. So it's statistically. So if anyone sees how many members we have, they can kind of figure out how many listeners we have. So you can do.
That's maths. Maths is not cool.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how many. Really, I'm just saying there's a lot more people that could be in that group based on how many downloads we get. That's all I'm saying. So.
Heck yeah, guys.
Because that's where the party's at. But anyways, Alice Through the Looking Glass, a sequel. So let's start it off.
Alice Through the Looking Glass is a 2016 American fantasy adventure film directed by James Bobbin, written by Linda Wolverton, and produced by Tim Burton. It is loosely based on the Through the Looking Glass by Lewis Carroll and is the sequel to the 2010 film Alice in Wonderland. The film stars Johnny Depp, Anne Hathaway, Mia Wasikowska. Ooh. I always pronounce her name wrong.
I don't know.
Right, Rhys Ifans, Matt Lucas, Helena Bonham Carter, Sacha Baron Cohen, and features the voices of Stephen Fry, Michael Sheen, Timothy Spall, and Alan Rickman in his final film role. The film tells a story about Alice coming across a magical looking glass that takes her back to Underland and finds that the Mad Hatter is acting madder than usual and wants to discover the truth about his family. Alice then travels through time and comes across friends and enemies at different points of their lives and embarks on a race to save the Hatter before time runs out. Alice Through the Looking Glass was released by Walt Disney Pictures on May 27, 2016. It received generally negative reviews from critics, and it was a box office failure, grossing over $249 million, whilst the first film grossed over $1 billion. Whoa, I didn't know that. How sad.
Well, I mean, it's funny that they call this a box office failure. I guess they say that because they wanted it to raise as much money as the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see, the budget of the film was $170 million, and it grossed $254 million. That to me looks, it's maybe not crazy profit, but that's a good amount of money there.
Right? I would say that's more than double, maybe almost.
Not even close. But
I can't do math. Right,
it's $80 million. In profit. And considering that every other Disney movie that's come out in 2016 has been broke box office records, this one did more than broke even. It was up $80 million. So I really, wouldn't call it a box office failure, but I guess if they were trying to meet that 1 billion mark, I will say it was interesting when I went to go see it. It was opening weekend. The amount of screens this movie was on was insane. There must have been like a time like every half hour. It must have been on like 8 screens in this one movie theater.
Holy cow! I know you're in Southern California now too, so that's closer to Disney. So I feel like maybe that had something to do with it because we had a lot of showings up here, but I don't think that many.
Well, I mean, I didn't see it at Downtown Disney. It was actually in Anaheim Hills, which is right next to Anaheim. But still, I don't think they had that many on the screens downtown. Right. I just couldn't believe. Like, I was like, wow. And, you know, it was, I don't know. I mean, the screening I went to, it was like a Sunday afternoon. It was full enough. It wasn't empty or anything, but I just couldn't believe. I was like, there's no way that they're packing in all these screenings. I was like, oh, my God. Because there wasn't even that many people, like, around, like, in the lobbies or anything like that. So, you know, I don't know. I've been to this movie theater before where it's, like, super, like, you know, where it is super packed. But, you know, I'm trying to think something. X-Men came out the same weekend, too.
Yeah, X-Men Apocalypse. Was it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or was that a week later? I want to say
I think it was later.
Yeah.
But literally X-Men Apocalypse came out the same day, and I think that I think there's a lot of crossover there as far as people that would go see both, and I feel like that probably hurt it as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I don't know, but that doesn't really matter because we're not talking about box office results.
No. Talking about the movie, not the money it made. Because it's not like we're going to see any of that movie money.
No, we're not going to see any of that movie money.
Doggone it.
You know, and also generally speaking, you know, a lot of people get really hung up. It's like, oh, this movie must be good. It made X amount of dollars. I'm like, I don't really care that much.
Yeah, I hate that concept.
Yeah, I like, you know, if there's a movie that I like or a director that I like to see those films be successful so that they can, you know, do more things. That's all that really matters.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So in this case... So, James Bobbin directed this film. And let's just talk about him for a minute while before we leave this topic.
All right.
Because I got kind of mixed feelings about what James Bobbin's doing here. So, James Bobbin has done things that I truly, truly love. Because he was a writer-director on The Ally G Show. Which obviously we're going to get into Sacha Baron Cohen, and 11 O'Clock Show, which was the show that Sacha Baron Cohen started doing his characters on, Ally G. And that stuff is like, I'm such a huge fan of that show and all that. So it's, you know, I love what he's run to the table with that, of course. He's also was writer, executive producer, and director of Fly the Conchords. So he's done a lot of quality things. He was a director of the last two Muppet movies that has come out through Disney. Now, 2011, The Muppets, which I think is a near-perfect film. So, I mean, he's got that. And then, you know, then right after that, I did Muppets Most Wanted, which was very poor in the quality department.
Why did you like it?
I mean, it was subpar. I mean, wow, you thought it was just as good as the other Muppet movie?
No. I thought The Muppets, their return to the big screen was the best one. But I enjoyed Muppets Most Wanted. It was just goofy and fun. But we're not here to talk about that.
No, I'm just talking about James Bobbin. So, I mean, I mostly support what he's doing.
Yeah, totally.
And it looks like he's directing the upcoming film, which is... so ridiculous, which is a cross
over
film of Men in Black and the 21 Jump Street franchise.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, this is the first time you're hearing about this? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, came out. Remember when like Sony got hacked and all those like emails came out? When was that?
Was that like one of them?
Yeah, that film was in development. Yeah, so whenever that was a long time ago too. That's when I first heard of it. Yeah, and So I think that's going to be awesome, personally, because I think the 21 Jump Street movies have been, like, super excellent.
I went into it thinking it was going to be the dumbest movie ever. I laughed so hard at those two, like, ridiculously. Yeah. I haven't seen the second one, which I'm regretting right now, but...
I would say that, and again, since we're just talking off the cuff randomly here, yeah. off the rails, that the second one, like, far surpassed it, like, because it was just pretty much, like, just nonstop laughing. Like, there was, like, no let-up at all.
And, okay, I'm going to go watch 22
Jump Street, yeah, it was pretty incredible. So, this guy's got a pretty good track record, and I'm not really quite sure... I think that Muppets Most Wanted and what we're about to get to, Alice in the Looking Glass. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, there's probably too many, even though he's the director of the film, I feel like there's probably still too many cooks in the kitchen here. So I'm not, you know, I still want him to be successful. I love things he's done in the past. Mm-hmm. He might be doing something good in the future, but there's a little foreshadowing of my feelings towards Alice in the Looking Glass there. But, whatever. So go James Bobbin. But yeah, Tim Burton did not direct this one.
But he was producer, so.
Yeah, but I feel like he probably wasn't involved at all. Like, I feel like.
Yeah, he might have, I think, just for, like, conceptually.
Yeah.
He was involved, but yeah, I don't feel that it really had that Tim Burton feel.
Yeah, no, I feel like he probably had literally nothing to do with this movie, but since he kind of created the world and the look that they want to put Tim Burton's name on it to market it, and so they're like, hey, we're going to put you as producer since you created this world. And he was like, whatever. Let me go off and live next door to Helena Bonham Carter.
Right. Well, he's currently touring right now, too, because he has an art exhibit that he's been doing for the last 3 years. And he's been touring internationally, if I'm not mistaken. So
there you go. So
maybe that too.
He's not making a movie. He's touring.
Yeah. He's doing his art stuff, which is absolutely rad. I love it.
Oh, brother. So anyways.
So let's talk about the people in the film.
Okay.
Well, where do you want to start, James?
Let's talk about what we liked about the film.
Okay.
We could just kind of go a little, you know, point by point, back and forth here.
Totally.
You know, and we're probably going to agree on some things, so then we'll elaborate at that point.
I have a feeling we're going to disagree about a lot of it, though.
Probably.
Well, let's talk about the look of the movie first.
Okay.
The overall look of Alice in Wonderland, I think, was stunning. Just visually, everything about it it caught my attention and grabbed my eye. And I think my favorite redo of the characters in the second movie was the Queen of Hearts castle. It was made out of vegetables and plants. Like, I thought that.
What does that mean? I didn't understand that. Why was that?
I didn't either. And I, you know, I don't know if that's like goes back to the source material. But I just think that she had to create her own little world and her own people. So she used vegetation and plants and bugs. You know, the kind of creepy things.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked how it looked. And how they presented it. It was her own little crazy thing. I mean, I wasn't really sure like where it came from. I'm like, oh, okay, the Queen of Hearts, all of a sudden there's nothing really heart-esque about her.
Nope.
But that was something I didn't like. But the visually, I just thought that her castle was very pretty.
So, I mean, the film, let's compare to the first one, the look of it is kind of... it's like they turned it up a notch. Did you feel like it was kind of like too much?
There were times where I felt like it was too much. There was so much to look at on the screen. You know, originally, I wanted to go see it in 3D. Then I didn't. I was very happy because there would have been so much to look at.
Yeah, I didn't see it in 3D either, by the way. So.
Yeah. And it, I did feel that it was a lot going on. But there were only certain scenes that I felt that way. I thought that when Alice goes through the clock into Time's world...
Mm-hmm.
I thought the way that they depicted where he was beautiful.
And Time's area, whatever that was, kingdom.
Yeah.
That was kind of a cool look. It was pretty dark. It was just enough, and even when they were in like those infinity rooms, I guess, where I thought that was pretty cool looking
so
as well.
So cool.
But I kind of felt like a lot of the other scenes of Wonderland were like they just like turned it up so much from the first film.
I thought the room that she was in, that she originally goes into, I mean, the houses in that era, are all I could think of to myself, were people actually decorating their houses like this? Like, this is the busiest room in the entire world. I don't even understand what's going on. But yeah, and then the room that she enters in when she goes through the mirror into Wonderland too is absolutely insane.
Yeah, that was a cool room. I actually put that as that scene, or that, not scene, but that whole sequence, whatever, is something that I liked about it, the movie. I thought that it was, because just leading up to it, she was running away, and I'm not quite sure in the rules of getting to Wonderland how she was able to do that.
Right. Well, it was because in the book, she does go through a looking glass and enters back to Wonderland through a mirror, so...
Right, and that's literally the name of the movie. But I still don't understand how it happened.
it's Underland. I mean, you just have to go. Suspension of disbelief at that point.
Well, I mean, I did. I just was like, oh yeah, she's got to go there. All right, cool.
My favorite part about that scene when she first gets to Underland is Humpty Dumpty and all the king's horses and all the king's men. When they jump down to fix Humpty Dumpty, and they're like picking up pieces of him and like kind of doing little puns with his body part. I just thought that was so funny. I wish I could remember their puns.
I don't remember there, but the mundaneness of.
they're like, oh, we're going to put it back together again. Okay.
We always like seeing nursery rhymes played out in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good old Humpty Dumpty. So I would say my favorite thing about the film, which is going to probably come to no surprise to longtime listeners, was Helena Bonham Carter.
Totally surprised. Can you believe you're saying this?
I know, it's quite a shock. But I thought that, I kind of thought she stole the movie, actually, in all honesty. I mean, I may be biased on that, but I thought that the Queen of Hearts was excellent in this one. I mean, she was probably my favorite part of the first one too. But you know, just to kind of take, I guess it's probably important to kind of talk about what we felt about the first one before we continue without getting too into it. But I was kind of disappointed with the first movie. And of course, it was visually overwhelming, and there was really, you know, kind of set a new bar for films like that at that level. But one of the biggest problems I had with the film is that it took me a while to realize that this was not a live adaptation of the animated film, as though the way that it was marketed is that it was actually a sequel to the events of the animated film. Because, you know, they definitely marketed the first movie as a live adaptation of the Disney animated film by calling it the same name, showing similar iconic scenes. And I haven't heard anyone else really have a problem with that besides me, but I don't know.
I think you might be the only one, James.
Yeah. I thought it was like not cool. I would have loved to have seen an actual live adaptation of the animated film, because, you know, I would say growing up, and particularly into my teenage years, that Alice in Wonderland was my favorite animated Disney film. And it's still up there, but I was obsessed with it when I was a teenager. So, you know, because it's all trippy, man, and you know, and I just loved it. I loved going on the ride at Disneyland. That was my favorite time to go on the ride, because I was just super obsessed with the film. I still like going on it, because it's, you know, with the new,
it's amazing
with the new animation in there.
I love all the new
pretty,
stuff.
Pretty amazing. I wish they would do that to more Fantasyland rides, but but anyways,
so the second movie, you felt Helena Bonham Carter stole the movie.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything every scene she was in, it was good. I mean, one of the things I probably was kind of like about in the first movie was like how huge her head was. Like, no, that was never really explained. And this movie actually explains it, and I was like, I like it. You know, I bought it. I was like, cool. And I love how, you know, she walks in the room and just like presents, like she just wants gifts as soon as she is in there.
I think it's just because you like Helena Bonham Carter.
I do love her, but I really felt like like that was definitely the most enjoyable part of the film to me, and including, I guess this is another thing, but it kind of ties in with her as well, is that they kind of go into the backstory of her and her sister, and I love that part. In fact, like I wish there was more of that. Like I was really into it. You know, that could have went really wrong and been kind of boring or annoying or unnecessary. And I love the flashback scenes. I love showing the Queen of Hearts kind of becoming the Queen of Hearts. So, yeah, what were your thoughts on Helena?
I loved her. I thought she played a great Queen of Hearts, and I love... why am I forgetting your name?
Anne Hathaway.
As White Queen. I thought that they played really well together.
Anne Hathaway looks stunning again.
She always looks absolutely amazing. I'm always absolutely blown away by how beautiful that woman is. Just amazing, amazing. I love their storyline. I thought that it was neat how they tied the tarts into their history and... why it's such a big deal. So yeah, it was a good story, but it wasn't my favorite part of the movie, amazingly. And the Queen of Hearts wasn't the favorite part of the movie either.
Oh boy. Well, what was your favorite part of the movie?
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, nice.
I really thought that I wasn't going to like his character that much. But the moment that he came on screen, I was just hooked. And I thought, this guy is going to be the ultimate bad guy. It's just, you know, he's going to destroy everything. And then you watch the movie and you find out, okay, well, he's not really the bad guy here. Like, he's just trying to protect time and keep himself alive and keep, you know, the clock working and not destroy the world. So it's really, right. really surprising to me to find out how much I loved that character. And how much I totally disliked Alice. I was so...
Really?
Yes. Okay.
Well, before you jump to Alice, let me reach.
Yeah, jump to Alice.
Let me talk about time for a second.
Yeah, talk about time. I thought, yeah, he was. I just loved his storyline. Everything about him was great.
Yeah, we alluded to that. We loved his lair or his kingdom or whatever. But, you know, I'm a huge Sacha Baron Cohen fan, and so, you know. I haven't seen there's another movie he put out this year, The Brothers Grimsby, I think it was called. I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, I want to see that one. I was going to say we should watch it together.
All right, you got it. Okay. But anyways, I love his movies, obviously, but any side role that he's in or whatever, I thought he, you know, kind of the first time you see him a little bit out of his regular element, was in Sweeney Todd, which I thought it was absolutely incredible. And
yes, so awesome.
You know, so it was just, I thought he was awesome. Like, you know, I'm really able to not see Sacha Baron Cohen. You know, some people might disagree with that, but I really thought that I really just bought the character right away. Like, I didn't, like, just see Sacha Baron Cohen doing it.
I don't think I've ever seen him as Sacha Baron Cohen as. Like, and we've talked about this before. I always see Nicolas Cage as, or, you know, John Travolta as. I don't feel that they embody that character and, like, morph into them.
Right.
You know? But Sacha Baron Cohen is, like, one of those actors that's absolutely the type of person that will just embody a character. And you don't see him. You see the character that he creates. You know, you don't think of his name first. You think of the character's name first.
Exactly.
And that's exactly how I saw him in the movie. And his storyline and the things that he said. I mean, there's so much that he said that was so poignant and, like, hit me, like, emotionally.
Wow.
I was like, oh, that – it was just really weird, you know, how – well, for me, it's just different, you know. with the way my brain works.
You're like, for me, since I'm different from everyone else.
Well, no, I'm not different. It's just that I have, everyone has different trigger points that exact emotion. And so, like, the whole concept of time and stealing time and that, you know, time isn't always ours and we'll have it and then we won't, you know, don't abuse time. Like, that, those things just, like, hit home. And so him saying it and then, oh, yeah, it was just, I don't know. It was an emotional and wonderful experience watching him play time. Yeah. And you watch him from being so guarded over it, too. You know, he's becoming frantic. You know, right. He's going to die. You know, time's going to die. The world's going to end. And you see kind of his battle for us. I thought his performance was amazing. Loved it.
Yeah, it was definitely a highlight of the film. I'll give you that. It's hard to compete with Helena Bonham Carter for my heart.
Seriously. And I feel that way, but I feel that way not for Helena Bonham Carter, but the Queen of Hearts. Like, I love the Queen of Hearts. I think she's a great, insane person.
Right.
Oh, and I didn't feel that she was that insane, this movie. You know, she just was an off-the-cuff, off with your head. Like, she had a little bit more depth and story behind her, you know, with, you know, her sister. And I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that can go either way, because sometimes you just want your insane people just to be insane. But I liked it, though. I like learning her backstory. I found it, like, to me, that was one of the most interesting parts of the movie. And in fact, like, I would, I kind of wish that was the whole movie for the most part. Like, right. I would full on watch a movie about the backstory between the Queen of Hearts and the White Queen. Anyway, it seems like a, you know, straight to DVD title, but I would still watch it.
Me too.
But I mean, in all honesty, I love Sacha Baron Cohen more than Helena Bonham Carter as a performer, but you know, and not every role that Helena Bonham Carter's ever done has been like my favorite thing on earth, you know, like, but you know, there's just something happened when she played Bellatrix. It was Bellatrix and Fight Club. It was,
oh, I loved her in Fight Club.
You know, yeah. Like, it was, I think it probably started Fight Club in all honesty, but it was solidified with Bellatrix.
When they're Bellatrix
and Shane.
Yeah.
And I was just like, just a devotee of hers.
Nice.
You know, so it's, you know, I am biased, but that, but when we're talking about acting, Sacha Baron Cohen, I'm talking about having a crush on Helena Bonham Carter.
right.
There's two different things.
Can we talk about the way that they made time look? Like, the back of his head, how it was all clockwork?
Oh, yeah, that was cool, yeah.
It's been cool, like, how he really was just all clockwork, and I just was blown away by that's how they imagined him. He was a piece of time as opposed to, you know, a man.
Right.
Not human, whatever. Well, it is Wonderland, so who knows. But yeah, I love the way that they made him look. And he's so tall anyways, you know, so to capture that height on screen just makes him look gigantic.
Yeah.
I'm all like motioning. I'm like, it's you.
Yeah. You're like straight up a time fangirl.
I'm a time fangirl. Like, Sacha Baron Cohen, if you're listening to this, I'm geeking out on your time.
Yeah, he loves the show.
He totally loves the show.
He loves it. Can't get enough.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right.
So let's I'm going to actually skip to some. Oh, let's talk about Alice. So, all right. So, so what you said, Alice, you were disappointed with her. You didn't like her.
I wasn't disappointed with the actress, with Mia Wasikowska. Oh, Wasikowska. I always say her last name wrong. I'm so sorry.
She listens too.
I thought the performance was wonderful. It was very much her as Alice, but I was so ticked off with what Alice did. She's like, oh, here, I'm just going to steal the chronosphere, do something that, you know, they told me not to because it'll destroy the world so I can go back and save the Mad Hatter. And I get it. She loves the Mad Hatter, but I mean, dude.
Right.
And then just like completely, I was so mad at the character. And I don't, not that I disliked it in any way because it was driving the story. This is what, you know, the story was. But I was just so mad that I don't know. It just seemed like it was out of character for Alice, for me. You know,
Well, I guess you brought up a really good point here, because we could talk about the plot of the film, which I really thought it was kind of weak, you know, and it didn't really, just didn't really, I'm not going to say it doesn't make sense, because I mean, it made sense, but it didn't make sense for the characters, like you just pointed out.
Right. It's not something that Alice would do. I mean, Alice did things that she, not that she wasn't supposed to do, but she never did anything that would possibly cause problems, I guess it would be, or put others in danger, which is essentially what she was doing. And it's right. Because, you know, she didn't realize, which I get. You know, at the end of the movie, they, you know, she kind of goes back. She's like, I understand what I did now, and I shouldn't have done it.
Well, we should clarify exactly what we're talking about here.
Alice steals the Chronosphere to go back in time to help the Mad Hatter find his family, find out what happened to his family, because he believes that his family is still alive.
And, yeah, the thing, the beginning of the movie, when Alice first encounters the Mad Hatter, he's kind of just fraught about his family, and
he looks terrible.
Yeah, and quite mad. If you,
wait, very so mad. Like, the Mad Hatter was very mad,
and
more so than usual.
And I kind of felt like Alice's like willing to just risk it all attitude, based on what was essentially at that point nonsense. I mean, it pans out to not be nonsense, mm-hmm. but based at that point, like, she just kind of like dove in with 2 feet, and I wasn't there yet. I feel like as the audience, yeah, you need a little bit more convincing that this risk needed to be taken.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It dove in so quickly, but as we progress the adventure, I think that you start to understand why she's doing it. Because one, she needs that adventure, because she's in, you know, in the real world, she doesn't have that anymore. It's getting taken away from her. Mm-hmm. So here she is going on this adventure to help somebody, you know, that she loves and cares about. So I think it kind of does get there, but it was really quick. And all of a sudden, she just does something that's very rash and was just, yeah, very out of character for her.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, but, you know, But overall, I was pretty indifferent. I mean, I liked Alice in the real world. I like those scenes at the beginning of the movie. I thought they were fun.
Really good, yes. And I love that Alice's mom is still there. She's still a big part of it. You know?
So, yeah.
That's stupid. What's the stupid guy's name that she didn't marry? Oh, my God. I hate that guy so much. There was so much, like, I'm sitting there. I went and saw the movie with my mom. And we had a date. It was wonderful. And we're sitting there watching the movie, and I was like, wait, is he just, like, straight being a misogynist jerk? Like, did he just say women can't do this? And I got really mad. Like, a little feminist in me is like, how dare he? And I was like, I could feel, like, the hair on the back of my neck standing up, and I was like, wait a minute. One, it's a movie.
Oh, there's that.
Two, it's Victorian London. It was a very different time. And for Alice to even be, like, as vocal and amazing and adventurous as she was, that was huge. So I just had a moment.
Right. Well, I mean, it was trying to evoke those emotions, and it didn't have much time to do it. So, right. I mean, I do have to give props to those scenes at the beginning and the end, because I thought they were pretty solid, you know.
Definitely.
So, but yeah, I'm gonna throw something out there right now about something I didn't like about the movie, and it kind of touched on a little bit here, but I'm just gonna throw this out there.
All right.
And we're just gonna, everyone's gonna have to accept it.
Okay.
And it was a Mad Hatter. I pretty much, like, this the whole thing with him, how he was acting when Alice met up with him, everything about it, it was just rubbing me the wrong way. I just was not feeling it at all. And I think I said to Shannon after we saw it, I was like, I think I would have liked the movie a lot more if, like, the Mad Hatter wasn't in it. So, you know, and also just, like, I wasn't like head over heels about the original Mad Hatter either. I mean, in the original and in the other film. Mm-hmm. you know, I applaud Johnny Depp's body of work. I think he's a fantastic person. I mean, I'm not a Johnny Depp hater by any means. I mostly liked the Mad Hatter in the first movie. There was a few things that I was like, this is kind of pushing it a little bit for me. But I don't know. I just didn't really dig. I just wasn't in the mood for the Mad Hatter.
Poor Hatter.
Especially, you know,
here he is dying, and you're like, forget that dude.
I mean, I guess I wasn't too sympathetic to his dying, but I don't know, just the whole thing about the stuff with his parents and all that stuff. It just seemed like every scene he was just kind of annoying. Like, I don't even know how to put it. I can't even, like, as the film progresses and they're doing stuff together, you know, I mean, it was... I mean, because in the first movie, he's kind of, you know, showing Alice or reminding Alice that there's, you know, there's so much more to life than... than the mundane, you know, and that's kind of the Mad Hatter's role in all this, right? And and this one, he's kind of seems like a wounded puppy.
I think that's where a lot of people had a problem with the movie. I loved the Mad Hatter, and I liked the way that Johnny Depp played him, and I liked the character, but I think that storyline was, I think that's where it was difficult for people to swallow, to go with. Because Mad Hatter's mad, most definitely, but they did create him as such a wounded character, and the Hatter isn't, you know, he doesn't strike me as a wounded character.
You wouldn't think that at all. You would think no matter what the situation, he wouldn't really be too worried about it. You know?
Right. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think the movie would lose a lot of people is that that storyline. But I know that there's a lot that ties in all of the storylines, like Alice's need for adventure, the Mad Hatter's need for family, and the fixing of the relationship of the Red Queen and the White Queen. Those all tie into Alice's real life, like what's going on in her real life, you know, in time, especially, you know, because there is no time. We can't bar against it. Everybody hates it, but we've got what we've got. I wasn't a big humongous fan of that storyline. It really does tie it all in together in the end. How it all does make a difference for Alice and how it plays into her real life, her outside Wonderland life, to help her understand and come to terms with what's happening there. And I think that the story towards the end of the movie kind of came together in that respect.
Right. So you saw the parallels towards the end.
Yeah, I saw the parallels. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But at first I was like, well, this is weird. This doesn't make any sense. Alice's reaction, the Hatter being blah. Yeah. I just didn't buy it at first, but I think the end is where I was happiest, I guess. I don't know. It's so weird. Like every time time was on, every time time. Oh my
every
goodness.
Time, 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 time.
he was on screen. I was so excited and happy. I was really stoked with how they did that, but yeah, I think that the best part is how they tie all of those lines together. I think that was the most, like, I think it was the best part of the movie is like towards that end when it all starts coming together.
Yeah, I guess at that point the movie had kind of lost me, so I didn't.
You're like, I already checked out.
Well, one other thing I did like, actually, which just visually was basically they kind of do the Back to the Future thing where if you do, you know, if you see something, you know, you see your future self and the or your past self and blah, blah, then time will destroy itself. And that begins to happen. And that process that happens
Stunning.
Yeah, it was pretty cool looking. It was like, it looked like everyone was turning to stone, basically.
Yeah. I loved that. I thought that was, it was creepy too.
Yeah.
Like, super creepy. You're like, okay. But the whole world, kind of everything imploding, because you don't really know what's going to happen, right? No, I don't think that there's really been a movie that's touched on what would happen. You know, does the world implode?
Right.
What does it happen? What does the end of time look like? And they did a really great job of kind of just taking everything and that mad dash, you know, to get the chronosphere back to where it's supposed to be. I thought it was insanity.
That was pretty cool. And then it looked like time had ended. And then I was sat there. I was like, oh, well, that'd be an interesting way if this movie ended that way.
The end. Thanks, Disney. Now all of a sudden you have done Yeah, that was. I liked how there was still that spark.
Yeah, that was cool. I think overall, I think the reintroduction to Wonderland, it's such a crucial scene to get everybody reinvested in what you're about to watch, because this film came out 6 years after the other one, and this day and age, that's kind of a lifetime.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it's kind of like, I mean, most sequels are like 3 years. You feel like that's stretching it. And, you know, I haven't watched the original film in a while, like probably not since that first year it came out.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
I watch it a lot.
Well, I was just saying, I'm not like super into it or anything, but
I watched that one probably at least once or twice a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Once or twice a month.
Well, I'm the type of person, I have my favorite movies and I will just put them on in the background while I'm working on stuff.
All right, you just have them.
If I'm at home or if I want to sleep and I can't sleep, I'll watch something. But I always have my favorites, and that's definitely in like the rotation of like my 15 favorite movies. So.
Well, then you have a completely different perspective than I on coming to see this, because you never really left Wonderland.
No, I never left Wonderland. I've been there. I lived there. I'm friends with the Queen of Hearts and the Mad Hatter, and I have tea all the time. Oh, that scene! The scene where time sticks them 1 minute to tea time. I laughed so hard. I was like, those poor schmoes are stuck 1 minute to tea time. If you have to like finish, you have to fix time, you better fix that. Because you cannot be 1 minute to tea time forever. It's terrible.
Oh, that's tedious. That's time.
I just thought that part was so funny. He's like, oh yeah, well, here you go. Thanks for not helping me. I'm going to stick 1 minute to tea time forever. Oh. That was messed up.
Time can be such a jerk.
Right.
But I think as the movie ended and I sat there, I was just like, I just kind of thought the movie was okay. I mean, as I said, there's things that I liked about it, but the actual like story, I never really got that into. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there wasn't that like, oh man, whoa, we just went on an adventure and well, this is exciting. You know, like, I felt like they spent so much time on like everything else besides the story in this, like the visuals and the costumes.
Oh, the costumes were so cool.
That they just kind of forgot. Yes. Like, oh, yeah, who cares about that? Because
right.
I felt like it was almost okay. It was an almost good story. I feel like they really needed they needed a few more passes on the script, I think. You know, like just to get it to like I was like, oh man, this is great. This is a great story. Like, it's like, to me, it's just like, it's okay. You know, I mean, overall, you know, so, after I saw the movie, some people asked me what I thought, like, immediately afterwards. And the only thing I could say was, that was a movie.
Oh.
That I watched. You know, because people are asking that to say, should I go see it, you know, like in the theater. And at this point, I would say probably not, you know, especially since it's a month after its release. And if it's playing anywhere, I don't know, maybe it's coming to the discount theater soon, check it out. But I kind of, you know, the movies are so expensive these days. You know, if you go see a 3D movie, you're dropping $15 just for one ticket. You know, $20 for popcorn. You know, you got $65 on a date. We're talking out the door. This is not a $65 movie. I'm sorry, but.
Aww. No, I thought it was fully worth it. I did have a hard time in the beginning with the story, just because it was so out of character. But at the end of the movie, I was just sold about everything when they brought that whole story together. And a lot of what Time said, like I said earlier, you know, it just really hit home, and it was triggered some emotional points for me. And I was like, yeah, okay, you know, I love this movie, and I absolutely enjoyed it, and I told people to go see it. Like, yeah, go see it. Just go see it. Enjoy the visuals. Like, just go. Go see a matinee, whatever, you know? I absolutely enjoyed the movie, and I thought it was wonderful.
Well, there you go. There's some reviews. Yeah. And no matter what, this film will go down as the last film that Alan Rickman was a part of. I have to say, though.
Did you cry? I cried. I will admit, I don't cry at movies very often. You know, I cry at the Disneyland fireworks. Like, I cry at, you know, stuff like that. But movies, I don't know. They don't always hit me. But, like, hearing his voice. Yeah.
It's actually something a little more creepy, for lack of a better word, that it's not, like, it's not him on screen, that you're hearing his voice when you know that he's passed away. Mm-hmm. And it was very short, like, his involvement. And I feel like he probably had more to contribute to the film.
Because didn't he pass away while it was filming? Or was it, I can't remember if he passed away, if it was post or if it was.
I don't know, but because he passed away like earlier this year, right? And they could have still been. He could have still had more things to record because his character's CG.
Right.
But.
Oh, you know what? Okay. You know what? We can talk about Alan Rickman a little bit more, but I do have one more thing I wanted to say.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about Alan Rickman too much more because I'm going to start crying.
That's okay. We have enough about him.
Okay. One of the scenes that really, I had a very much an emotional response to is when Alice is in the mental hospital, when she is strapped to the bed, and the doctor comes in getting ready to shoot her up with stuff, and it's female hysteria. This was a thing that was absolutely insane back in the day, that women suffered from hysteria, and they would be stuck in mental hospitals and injected with drugs. I mean, some women were lobotomized. I mean, just unbelievable, unspeakable things were done to these women because of female hysteria. And the culture at the time, these women were just so repressed, you know, emotionally, sexually, in every way possible. How can you not go flipping nuts bags about it? Seeing that scene in the movie, that was a big deal. That was pretty intense because this is considered like a family movie. And that part of our history, you know, of just not we as like Nancy, but just women in general. I mean, that is huge. Absolutely huge. And it's still, and it, you know, even in the books, it plays into it because Alice is put into a mental hospital, but I don't think it's for female hysteria. So for that to happen, I think was just absolutely insane and wonderful and crazy. Yeah. Like that scene. And the guy who plays the doctor, I can't remember his name. I know it's probably right here in front of me on the page, but, he also plays, what's his name? Sherlock Holmes's arch nemesis in the new Sherlock Holmes on BBC with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict. And just to be clear, in case people don't know, this is kind of when she kind of leaves Wonderland and is back to reality.
Back to the real world.
It's a pretty jarring way to bring back reality. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Yeah,
it was. And I like my mom and I, like, we were holding hands during that too, and I'm like, and when the doctor said female hysteria, my mom and I looked at each other because we both had that, like, that same view on it. We're like, you're this guy's a jerk.
Here's my thoughts too, is I feel like there was a lot of great ideas for this movie. I'm not gonna say this movie doesn't totally suck. I'm not saying that, you know, and I feel like stuff like that is cool. Like it just needed a little bit of better execution to kind of draw me more into what was going on, you know. And even though that scene was, you kind of had a point of reference for knowing about dark history of the way we treated women.
Women, yeah.
For
mental hospitals treated women.
Yeah, you know, just that particular thing alone. You know, it was kind of brushed upon in the movie. It was just kind of like, if you bring that knowledge of that to that scene, then it hits you like it did. But I don't think that the scene itself was not that really intense. Like, and I feel like it could have been more.
Ooh.
You know,
I don't know. I think that just having that scene in the movie was like, I don't know. It was pretty crazy as far as I'm concerned, but yeah, it's just me.
Well, I mean, there's scenes like in I don't know which one because they all kind of blend together in my head, but in the Pirates of the Caribbean films that like have their so as poignant as that, you know, that you're just kind of like, you're like, oh wow, like I can't believe they just dropped this in here. Like this is intense. Like there's a scene, I really don't remember which movie it is. It's probably the second one, where someone is asking Captain Jack to ship cargo that's humans, and then Captain Jack says, you know, people aren't cargo, mate. Basically, yeah. Essentially. He's being asked to bring slaves because this is, you know, they're like, that's, you know, it doesn't hit you over the face of that. You really have to think about what it is that they're talking about. But when you do, you're like, wow, that is like
that's huge.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's good writing.
Yeah.
That exactly is dang good writing.
Yeah. I don't recall which film it is. I'm pretty sure it's not the first one though. Or the fourth, or it could be the fourth. I don't know.
I think it is the fourth.
Okay. I've only seen that one once, so I don't know, but I just remember that.
Yeah.
That was just like, huh. Yeah, there's good stuff in that movie. There's mermaids.
There's mermaids. That's all I needed. As soon as I found out there were mermaids, I'm like, yep, I'm going to go see it. The worst movie ever. There's mermaids.
But anywho. So we've stated our final thoughts on this film.
Yay.
I'm sure this is the end of the Tim Burton-inspired Alice live-action films.
Yeah, I have a feeling that there probably won't be any more. But I really feel that they... when they ended the movie, though, they made it fairly final. You know, the way that they ended it, she's like, you know, I won't be coming back. I'll see you in my dreams. And, you know, Alice has to move on. She has to grow up. She has to live her life, which was a big thing. You know, when they leave and they go on the ship, but it's all three of them, you know, her mom, her, and then the new guy.
Right.
You can tell that there's a finality to it. You know, if Alice, to me, there wouldn't be a reason for Alice to go back to Wonderland because Wonderland will always exist without her, no matter what. But she is getting older now, and she doesn't need those things as much as she did when she was younger, which was really like the huge part of Alice in Wonderland in the beginning anyways, is that it was a little girl escaping life to Wonderland and, you know, into a world that was nonsense, realizing that she didn't need it to be nonsense. But anyhow, yeah, just the way that they talked about it. And, you know, what Time says at the end that, and even what Alice says too, you know, we can't borrow against time, that, you know, time isn't cruel. You know, he's there for us. We just have to use it to the best of our ability. Those last words is not wasting time and using what time you have to create something. Obviously I'm not quoting directly, but that's what I think hit me the most. Like at an emotional level, it's like, don't waste time. Create your own adventure. Do what you want to do. Get out there because it's not going to stop for you.
Right. And that's, I mean, again, if you want to take something positive away from all this, that's what it is right there, because that's, you know, that's the most valuable thing we have.
And seriously.
So let's get to some thoughts from some citizens of the Creepy Kingdom.
All right.
And the Citizens of the Creepy Kingdom Facebook group.
Which you can join, just ask to join the group on Facebook.
And I will personally approve it if you are not a fake Facebook account.
Not a fake Facebook account, and you don't look like you're too crazy.
I haven't had to decline anyone yet, so that hasn't happened yet.
We always like people that will contribute to a conversation, not try to dominate it and be mean.
No meanies allowed. No, there's none of that nonsense in this group.
There's never been that in the group, which I absolutely love and adore. Everyone here seems pretty nice. All right, so first person they commented on, has anyone seen Alice through the Looking Glass? Little Nikki. Hi, Nikki. I loved it. I'd like to see it again. I feel like I didn't retain enough of it. I feel that way too, Nikki. Like, I feel I want to see it again because, yeah, there's a lot there. James, really? Maybe you have to watch it again.
I don't know. I was like, I feel like I retained more than enough. Although I said I will watch it again for the Queen of Hearts scenes because I enjoyed them.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, hey, this girl Katie said that she thoroughly loved it, even with some of the heavier undertones. Why, thank you, Katie.
Well,
I'm a dork.
I mean, normally I don't like to insult people that leave comments. But I mean, what?
That Katie girl. But wow, this is just a little too silly. Okay, obviously that's my comment.
Oh, it's you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Me. Yeah. Hello. Oh,
I thought your name was Cupcake Terror. My bad. Oh my God, it makes so much more sense now.
Now, doesn't it make sense?
You've been Katie this whole time. Wow, this is wild. I've been wondering, like, this person I'm friends with on Facebook.
Hey, well, now you know, James. Oh, mystery solved.
Wow. Wow, you've made my life a lot more easier. Thanks.
Welcome.
All right, next comment.
Next comment is Kurt Covey. Hopefully I said your name correctly. I enjoyed it. Parentheses, the two Alice books are my favorites. Parentheses. The kids thought it was better than the first. I thought the first one was better. Well, thank you very much, Kurt. I don't know. Well, yeah, I like the first one a lot because it harkened back to the books. But I can see how the kids might like the second one. All right. Do you want to read the last one or shall I?
I'll read it. It's from one of our listeners who's written in several times. Crystal Dungeon, who I've mistakenly referred to as Crystal Dungeon because I think that's a cool name, but I think her name is cool as well. So many times we call it Crystal Dungeon. I'm sorry, Crystal.
Really?
But it's Dungeon. But anyways, Crystal Dungeon.
Crystal, can we just call you Crystal Dungeon?
Yeah. We need to get a definite answer on that one.
Yeah.
She probably doesn't want that. She's probably proud of her last name. She wrote, I loved it, made me want to see it again, and to see the first one. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on it.
Oh, yay, Crystal.
So Crystal obviously enjoyed what you had to say about it, Cupcake.
Woohoo! Glad I got people on the love train for Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Alice Through the Looking Glass. And yeah. I guess the last thing to say, since we're not going to, if you hadn't seen the film, you know, we're not going to spoil this. When we talked about the trailer, we were kind of enthralled by this picture that the Mad Hatter was holding in one scene with his safari hat on.
Oh, I loved seeing that. That was so awesome.
And it looked like it was an ant farm picture.
And it was an ant farm.
And it actually was an ant farm. So that's... So I will say that paid off.
That was a great payoff seeing that. And I loved his little safari hat. It was so funny. Oh, you know what I did like? I liked seeing him in all different ages. Seeing the Mad Hatter as a little kid.
Oh, because we went through time, of course. Yeah, I don't know. That wasn't really for me. But I like seeing the Queen of Hearts in different ages. So.
I like how they did that. Yeah.
Again, I keep going back to that story between the sisters. That was my favorite part of the movie.
So. I want to go and read the books. Like, very much want to go back and read the books.
Well, you read the books and let us know. Let us know how different it is from.
Sure it's very different. Because I'm pretty sure in the second book that the Mad Hatter is not wearing a safari hat with an ant in his hands.
Really?
I want to find out the parallels, though. I want to find out what, if anything, is kept from the book. So, yeah. All right. Now I know what books I'm reading next.
All right. And we'll have to... I don't know. I don't know if we'll have, like, I don't think we're gonna do another episode on the parallels between the book.
And, no, good gracious.
I think you'll just have to join the Citizens of the Creepy Kingdom, and yeah, you'll post about it in there.
There we go. I'll post my thoughts. Give me a few weeks, guys.
If you would like to email us here at the show, you can do so by just typing in your email box thing, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And if you'd like to check out any of our other podcasts, such as Curvy Kitty Chat, Roxy's World, and The Even James is a Podcast podcast, just go to monstermoviemedia.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pictures, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google Plus, Tumblr, and Pinterest. I actually heard someone call Pinterest Pinterest once. It was weird. Anyways, just go to creepykingdom.com. And once again, if you're on Facebook, join the Citizens of the Creepy Kingdom. And lastly, if you would like to support Creepy Kingdom financially so we can continue bringing this excellent programming, just go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. Well, until next time, my friends.
I have a girl now. It is Mimi I like it. Pleasant dreams.